Chapter 51. The Maniac Cathedral. I had been past St. Pancras when I first arrived in London. Molly had come to meet me, but I was so taken with all the bustle of traffic and the crowds that I hardly noticed many of the buildings. Attached to the station stood the Midland Grand Hotel, George Gilbert Scott's gigantic Gothic construction. It was described by some as a maniac cathedral, and one could easily see why. 100 arched windows punctuated the massive red brick frontage, or jutted like pulpits from the facade, the honey-coloured pillars already greying in the grime of the city. Wherever I looked, a different carving caught my eye, but my vision was drawn ever upwards. On the right-hand side, a monolithic clock tower stood, topped by a soaring pinnacle, echoing the spires that rose from its corners, and from the lower tower to the other side of the entrance. Saluted by a lavishly uniformed doorman, we passed through the huge portico, and I was about to complain that the man who invented revolving doors had never tried negotiating one in billowing skirts, when I emerged into the lobby, my guardian pushing impatiently behind me, to find my breath taken away. The grand staircase ascended magnificently in rich carpeted white stone, with intricate iron balusters and a dark wooden rail. Dizzyingly high above was the bottle-green ceiling, glittering with countless painted stars. Polished green and pink limestone adorned the vermilion-painted walls, stenciled with thousands of golden fleurs-de-lis. Everywhere I looked were carved sunflowers, fruit, peacock tails, and myriads of other designs.
"For goodness sake, March," Sidney Grice nudged me. "You are gawking like an American."
There were few worse insults in his exhaustive and often exhausting vocabulary. I tore my eyes away and forced myself to concentrate on our business, as he ignored the long oak reception desk and marched straight to the concierge, who had been commandeered by a tall, podgy, befurred woman, accompanied by a page-boy, struggling to control 3 yapping, Pekingese dogs, snapping at his legs.
"Inform Prince Ulrich Schlangazan that Mr. Sidney Grice has arrived,"
my guardian commanded, and the concierge, a well-built middle-aged man with a military bearing, glanced up.
"Certainly, sir. I have not travelled all the way from the exotic occidental wilds of Gower Street to chitter-chat about what you are just doing,"
Sidney Grice scolded, as though our journey had been one to rival Burton and Speke's search for the source of the Nile,
"but to instruct you in your duty to me."
The concierge was flustered.
"As soon as I've dealt with this lady, sir."
"Now," Mr. G insisted, "I am here on unofficial business." The way he said unofficial made it sound very important indeed, and the concierge jumped to his feet immediately.
"Certainly, sir. Prince Ulrich, you say?"
"I do not, but I did." Mr. G leaned on the desk, like a drinker at a bar.
"Do you know who I am?"
The lady's fur became erect like an angry cat.
"I know who you are not,"
Sidney Grice replied nicely.
"For your fake pearls, counterfeit perfume, canine pelt coat, and inaccurate diction, invite me to venture that you are unentitled to the aristocratic monograms on the luggage being transported this way."
"How dare!"
"And I suggest that you quit this establishment."
Sidney Grice pinched at something on his ulster, as if she had given him a flea.
"Before I divulge some of my observations to the manager of this garish hostelry."
"We are none of us who we pretend to be," I recall Jones Chang asserting. In an instant the lady threw her hand into the air.
"Take everything away,"
she commanded the porters grandly.
"I shall not stay in an establishment that admits such riff-raff as this parvenu."
My guardian blinked slowly.
"Though it is unmerited, I believe the word you are dredging from your truncated vocabulary is parvenu."
He articulated the last word precisely, and the alleged lady expanded.
"You fribbing trap."
Her jaw chewed in an elliptical motion like that of a grazing goat. Her head went back and she threw it forward. Mr. G stepped smartly aside.
"Mein Gott,"
a voice murmured.
"You keep delightful company."
And I turned to see Prince Ulrich Albrecht Sigismund Schlangazan, resplendent in his uniform of Prussian blue, adorned with black looped cords and braids, a magnificent golden epaulette on his right shoulder, and a pool of spittle at his feet.